ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Larry Holder here of The Athletic. Of course, many loyal Sports Hangover listeners realize that Gus and I started this show 10 years ago. 10.5 years ago. That is wild to even say. Different times in life. Sports Hangover, I created the name. Don't let anyone tell you any differently. Jordan's over there smirking because he knows it's true. I had to inform him of the history of the show because Gus probably has claimed that he's done it all himself his entire life.
Yeah, he's skewed the facts a little bit.
He would never do such a thing.
Never.
Never. But no, filling in for Gus today for the first 2 hours here on Sports Hangover ESPN New Orleans. Hour three, my longtime buddy, Andrew Lopez. We once worked together at the Times-Picayune. I could say that about a lot of people now. We've once worked together at the Times-Picayune. Andrew Lopez is going to be doing hour number three, but I will be at the helm here, first and second hour here on the Sports Hangover. And really, we've got a loaded show. I decided since I'm only doing 2 hours and it's one day of retaking my show back, we'll let Gus have it back on Monday, that we will jam it up with guests from The Athletic. Of course, plenty of our listeners here know about The Athletic already, but look, we're going to be talking every sport locally, and we'll hit the NFL on the national scale. 12:15, we'll have Will Guillory. Of course, the Pelicans, their season is officially over. We will talk with Will Guillory about what is next with the Pelicans. Already locally in the media, there have been numerous columns about the removal, potentially, of Alvin Gentry as the coach as the Pelicans finish 30-42. So we'll talk with Will Guillory about that. 12:30, we'll head up to Baton Rouge, talk with LSU beat writer Brody Miller from The Athletic. We will get all the ins and outs of a wild week in college football. How has LSU handled it? And maybe we'll actually talk about some on-the-field things that are going on at LSU, because they're actually practicing and doing things as the college football landscape is kind of leveled off here for at least a minute. So if things change, obviously we'll bring that to you here. 12:45, we will go NFL on a national scale. Our national NFL writer at The Athletic, Lindsey Jones, she will join us at 12:45. Kind of get us up to date on what the league has been doing with testing, how they've handled it, and maybe we'll actually get her thoughts, because look, the NFL is going to go forward. We know that. And get her thoughts maybe on a grand scale of where she thinks the Saints are going to go. Hour number two is going to be heavy, heavy Saints. First two segments, I'll go through my thoughts on both sides of the football, because if you don't know it, the Saints' original schedule, they were going to have a preseason game tonight. It was supposed to be preseason game number one in Los Angeles, christening the new stadium against the Rams, but obviously that is not happening. They are doing OTA-style practices right now. On Monday, it will get in the pads, and that's the first time the media will actually be allowed in. So we're going to talk heavy Saints in hour number two. Catherine Terrell, our Saints beat writer at The Athletic, she's going to join us at 1:30. And Jeff Duncan is going to join us at 1:45. We'll talk Saints and Pelicans in there, and I'm sure the conversation will skew heavy Pelicans in hour three with Andrew Lopez. But look, I'll be honest with you. Jordan was saying, hey, do you need any sound bites from the game last night? No, I didn't watch it. I'm sure not a lot of people watch it. I'm sure the Pelicans were barely in the building. I know they're already back. So the questions now move on to what is next for the Pelicans. We know Zion's going to be around. Brandon Ingram, I know he's going to be a hot topic just in the free agency realm. But he's a restricted free agent. I'm going to liken it to when Eric Gordon was a restricted free agent. I can tell you, whatever offer a team is going to give, I'm sure the Pelicans are going to match it. So Brandon Ingram isn't going to be going anywhere for a while. So I really don't think that is going to be this major storyline, even though it's going to be talked about. You're going to hear it on ESPN. You're going to hear about it, of course, on The Athletic if you're reading all of our national coverage as a hot free agent. But look, storyline now is the future of Alvin Gentry. And I honestly don't think we would be talking a ton about it if they would have performed better in the bubble. I don't. It's not going to ultimately come down to, all right, the bubble potentially got him fired, because obviously there were problems leading up to the bubble. And was some of that his fault? I'm sure people blame him. Some of it out of his hands, definitely. But there's going to be a fall guy. I mean, you go and play 2-6 and look lethargic and listless a lot in that bubble, and you finish the season 30-42. What did they finish? 13th in the West? I mean, that's far worse than I'm sure what many people figured, especially going into the bubble when you kept seeing the easiest schedule remaining, and they basically just went in the tank. They lost, what is it? They lost first to Utah, and then
the Clippers.
And then when they lost to the Clippers first. And
no,
then
they lost to the Jazz first, and then they lost to the Clippers.
Right. There you go. And so that really kind of did a downward spiral. And I'm curious to see, because just knowing how the Saints and the Pelicans operate, and just knowing style of how Tom Benson used to operate, and Gail Benson, she uses a lot of the way Tom operated businesses and coaches, that they typically have patience. I'm wondering if the patience has run out. Because a lot of times, look, I think people even were wondering, Alvin Gentry, should he even be back for this round? And couldn't get it done. And look, Zion only played 20-something games, and I get that. But if you're going to have, say, Brandon Ingram back for 4 years, I mean, do you want to give it one more go with Alvin Gentry? I know he's worn out his welcome to a lot of fans. You could just see, figure every game. Look, I can say this, and I've admitted this plenty enough times. I don't watch every game that the Pelicans do. I don't necessarily zero in on it, but you could see Pelicans Twitter. It's like every time they lose, fire Gentry, this, that, and the other. Like, so you know the pulse of the fan base is probably wanting a change. And when is that going to happen? Is it going to happen? Look, we're going to talk with Will Guillory about that. And I'm curious, really, to see if they move on it. Look, Jordan texted me and Andrew on the way here. Bulls already fired their coach, so that train's already getting moving. And so I'm curious to see how they handle this. And so, you know, Jordan, I'll be honest with you. I don't know where your take is. You and Gus are loyal Pelicans. This is the flagship station, obviously. But where do you feel like this needs to go? I'm just curious, like just from your standpoint.
So a few weeks ago, or before the bubble started, I was always on the fence with Alvin Gentry. I was more on the side of, all right, well, the players also have to play hard. They have to actually try while they're on the court, because a coach can't make a player play hard or hustle. And you saw Josh Hart hustle throughout the bubble, but you just kind of saw that lacking throughout the rest of the team. I think it was more frustrating because everyone saw Zion fully healthy, looked like he was in the best shape of his career, and then you see him play his first game, and oh boy, it is completely out of shape, and people are blaming it on Alvin for taking him out. And I really didn't blame Alvin for taking him out of the game, because that's the medical staff, so that's not on his part. But I do think he could have done a few things differently on with how he approached the bubble with his team and how he got his team prepared. But other than that, I'm still on the fence. I would like to see a little bit more of Alvin Gentry, but at the same time, I do feel where Pelicans fans stand on him, and I do see why they would like to see him let go. But I would like to see, if Alvin does get let go from that head coaching position, I would like to see him stay with the team in some way, shape, or form.
Like, I feel like, and my opinion is probably going to be unpopular with a lot of Pelicans fans, I don't really put a ton of blame on him. I know people are going to say, oh, this, that, and the other. I just feel like it's not all on him,
right?
But he might be the fall guy. Like, that's where I'm coming from, and I just feel like he knows what he's doing, and this season has been chaotic, obviously, and not just with the bubble. I mean, we all remember back, no Zion for half the season, you have all these new players, and I'm wondering, and I think it's fair to wonder, if there was no COVID, could this team have gotten it together and made the playoffs? I'd like to say yes, but we don't have the luxury of knowing that.
Right.
And so that is certainly something that I feel like the Benson powers that be, that's something that I'm sure they're going to take into consideration, because you could say, oh, well, that's just an excuse, but it's a real thing. You don't know how they would have done. And Zion getting hurt, that's not Alvin Gentry's fault, and these sort of things. And so But I get to where, look, you've got to win games. And he certainly has not done it regularly for a coach. And I feel like maybe the fact that they gave him this year, and he's got another year left on his deal too. So that is another thing where you're thinking, okay, do they want to give him one more shot or just bite the money and just say, all right, we're moving on? I mean, that, like, I'm curious to see their logic. I really don't have a good sense. Look, I've seen our reporting and reporting throughout the league that where it sounds like they're already talking potentially with not the Pelicans, but there's already talk of other coaching candidates.
Yeah, the media.
Right, it's in that. And so, here's another thing. When you have to ask a head coach on an annual basis toward the end of the year, what do you think about your job status? It's probably trouble. I mean, this is the is this the second or third year in a row we've probably seen this?
I think second.
Second year
I think
in a row.
Second year.
Yeah. So obviously there's some turbulence there. So look, I am really curious to see it. And like I said, I know Fletcher Mackel's written a column. I know Scott Kushner from The Advocate, Times Picayune, that he's written a column that there should be a parting of the ways. I know I'm curious to get my colleague Jeff Duncan, his take on it in hour number two, and we're going to get Will Guillory's take on it in hour number one. So on that note, let's take a quick break right here on the Sports Hangover. Again, this is Larry Holder. If you are not familiar with my voice and the creator of the show, don't let anyone tell you any differently. But of course, we're going to have Will Guillory coming up. But look, hour number one is brought to you by The King Firm. Don't play the game of claim with the insurance companies. If you've been injured in an accident, ring the King at 504-909-KING. Sports Hangover, ESPN New Orleans.
Are you tired of waiting in the big box stores?
Big box service in the store and after? Then come to Rod Superstore for name brand appliances from Frigidaire, Maytag, Whirlpool, Speed Queen, Sub-Zero, and Wolf. Rod's has knowledgeable salespeople to help with your kitchen design and appliance purchase. Rod's also has an in-house factory service department servicing only what we sell, leaving you without the long wait for service. Washers and dryers, refrigerators and freezers, dishwashers and ranges, most in stock for immediate delivery. Rod's has been a locally owned appliance center since 1984 and continues to service the Tri-Parish area for years to come. Rod's Superstore, 808 Barrow Street, Oma. Washers and dryers, refrigerators and freezers, dishwashers and ranges. Rod's Superstore, 808 Barrow Street, Oma.
Tired of your current vehicle? Ready for something fresh? Greg LeBlanc Toyota in Houma is having a trade-in sale.
Trade-in sale.
Even though you don't like your current vehicle, they want it. And we'll give you the low Greg LeBlanc Toyota pricing.
Plus, give you more for your trade.
Bring your trade and upgrade to the new 4Runner, Tundra, Camry, or Highlander you've been wanting.
Get started now.
Shop at GregLeBlancToyota.com, where your satisfaction is their number one priority. Our goal is to save every buyer $2,000. Greg LeBlanc Toyota in Houma.
Offshore workers are among the most important members of the Gulf Coast workforce. When a person working offshore or on a vessel is injured, the effects on their family can be devastating. At the King Firm, we are proud to have experience with these types of cases and make it a priority to see that our clients receive just compensation and are treated fairly. If you've been injured, don't play the game of claims with the insurance companies. Ring the King at 504-909-KING or 888-241-8766.
Avenue Wine & Spirits has one of the largest and most diverse wine and spirit selections in the city. At 2025 St. Charles Avenue, Avenue Wine & Spirits has some of the rarest bourbons, wines, and Japanese whiskeys, like 18-year-old Yamasaki. Avenue Wine & Spirits sells wine by the glass, and they've got free delivery for orders over $20. Dial 504-522-3864. Never show up empty-handed to a watch party again. Avenue Wine & Spirits, 2025 St. Charles Avenue.
You know what's not healthy? Stressing about work. Or maybe you're out of work. Stop. Hit reset. You can start a new life as an IT pro in as little as 4 months from the comfort of your own home, even if you have zero computer experience. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. Live online classes meet just twice a week. An emergency relief grant of up to $3,500 is available to those who qualify. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu.
Welcome back, Sports Hangover here. Larry Holder filling in for the Goose. He's loose somewhere. I don't want to know. I'm just glad he's not sending over, like, shirtless texts, which he does when he's away, and I happen to fill in for him. So I'm glad he has refrained from that for now. I'm sure they're going to be coming.
Yeah, later tonight.
Oh, I don't even want to know. But someone who I don't even know have a good transition. I'm not going to say Will Guillory has a shirt on. I don't know. But Will Guillory of The Athletic here, joining us right here on the Sports Hangover as I fill in for the Goose. Will, how are you, my friend? Good talking to you.
Records of the people at home. It's always good to talk to you, my man.
Yeah, as long as you know, we don't have to talk about being shirtless or God knows what. We'll leave that be. But but season's over, and I'm wondering if your work is now just beginning, just with the way that the Pelicans finished and just the question marks surrounding the job status of Alvin Gentry. Well, before we get to Alvin Gentry, just your overall perspective of the bubble experiment gone wrong for the Pelicans, finishing 2-6 in the bubble and really disappointing around the NBA, that people probably saying that they're probably the biggest disappointment of the bubble.
Yeah, I think there's no question they were the disappointment. I think in a lot of people's minds, they were the favorite going in to grab the 8th seed and at least be in the playing game, and then to see them kind of just fall on their faces the way they did, I think it raises a lot of questions that we didn't expect to ask, you know, about this team going into the bubble when it was all, everybody was feeling good about Zion being healthy and this young group, and they're bringing practically the whole roster to Orlando, and then, you know, you're giving up 149 in this game, you're giving up 25 threes in that game. So I think a lot of questions about just how this team was built and what it's going to take to actually, you know, turn all of that talent into a winning team. I think, you know, the pressure is on now probably more than it was, you know, a couple months ago.
Again, we'll talk about Alvin Gentry here in a minute or two. But as far as on the court, like, I'm not even – like, last night didn't even happen. I didn't even know what the score was. It's like it never actually happened, and now they're home. But on the court, personnel-wise, what are the question marks now leaving the bubble, leaving the season? What are the major question marks that you are going to be zeroing in on this offseason for this team?
There's no question it's the defensive end. I think everybody knows the offensive talent the team has with Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, Drew Holiday, J.J. Redick. I mean, they've got guys who can get 20 all over the roster, but they just can't get stops on a consistent basis. And I think we saw them do a little bit of that, you know, January up until March when the season was shut down and they were starting to get it together. But I think overall throughout the season, we saw this team struggling, you know, to defend bigger wings on the perimeter, to contain dribble penetration, to go against some of the more talented big men. I think they got a lot of weaknesses in different areas. And while a lot of that, you know, is going to improve once these younger guys mature and they learn how to play together, but they got to bring in some more defensive-minded players to balance out this roster if they're going to play this up-tempo style that they feel like works with guys like Lonzo Ball and Zion Williams.
Will Guillory, Pelicans beat writer at The Athletic, here on the Sports Hangover. Larry Holder filling in for the Goose. Personnel. So we know Brandon Ingram is a restricted free agent. We know a lot's going to be talked about there. I said in the first segment, I'm looking at it like Eric Gordon a few years ago when he was a restricted free agent. Brandon Ingram's going to get an offer. I assume the Pelicans are going to match it. Is that where your head is with his situation?
Yeah, I'm not even sure if it's going to get that far. I wouldn't be surprised if Ingram just gets an offer from the Pelicans and he just finds it before he even talks to anybody else, just because I think, you know, he's expressed over and over again how much he's enjoyed his experience in New Orleans. And I think, you know, there is something we've seen, you know, in the past with the NBA where you can gain a little bit of goodwill with the guy if you come forward and not put them in a position where they've got to sign a 4-year deal instead of a 5-year deal. We saw that in the past with a guy like Kevin Love, where Minnesota tried to play hard ball with him, and he ended up signing a shorter deal. And a few years later, he was pushing his way out the door to go to Cleveland. And I think, you know, that's a long way away from with B.I., but I think, you know, coming out and being proactive in these type of negotiations, I think it always can get you further with a guy, especially with a young talent like Brandon Ingram, who, you know, excelled so much this year, made his first All-Star game. So I think the negotiations are going to get done really quickly with him, and I think there's no question he's going to be back in the Pelicans jersey next year.
So it won't be as contentious as Eric Gordon, who was saying he loved Phoenix, and then he's like, oh, man, I got to go back to New Orleans. It won't be anything like that.
Yeah. No, I don't see B.I. saying he wants to go anywhere else, and I don't think people will be booing B.I. for the next 30 years like they're doing with Eric Gordon.
Rightfully so, right? Come on. He deserves all the boos he
Yeah, it's crazy. I think, you know, it's always like a tough battle we have among the Pelicans media. Like, who does the Pelicans fan base hate more, Anthony Davis or Eric Gordon? I go back and forth each day, but I still think Eric Gordon's going to have that lasting power.
I think Eric Gordon has to. I remember I was working for NBA.com at that point, covering those games, and Eric Gordon, you just shook your head. I mean, you're like, come on, man. So, yeah, I think he's more hated than Anthony Davis. But moving on to more relevant topics. So, okay, you mentioned Brandon Ingram. Any other contracts that are really going to be significant that they might move on to and maybe go in a different direction?
Yeah, kind of sticking to the same theme. How much are the Pelicans going to be proactive to kind of keep this young core happy, along with B.I. being a restricted free agent? You've got Lonzo Ball and Josh Hart, who are both going to be contract extension eligible, where the Pelicans don't have to sign them to a new deal this offseason. But if you get one done and you get a deal done with B.I., now you feel like this core is locked in long-term. Everybody's happy. Everybody's got their money. But then, you know, you're buying into this core without really seeing how they fit for more than 1 year. I think everybody likes, you know, the way, of course, those L.A. guys, Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, they're super tight. They love playing together. They fit in really well in the Pelicans locker room with Jrue Holiday and Zion Williamson. We know the bond between Lonzo and Zion, but do you want to really buy in on Lonzo being your point guard in the future? You know, how much do you want to pay Josh Hart to be kind of your pseudo sixth man? I think those are some questions the Pelicans are going to have to answer. And, of course, you know, it's a yearly thing, but, you know, what's the future with Jrue Holiday? He's a guy that 10 years older than Zion Williamson. Do you want to keep him, or do you want to cash in on him as an asset and maybe bring in some more younger players?
All right, Will, now the question that everyone wants to know and maybe have an answer for in the next few days: Alvin Gentry, his future with the Pelicans, where do you think it's going to stand?
Yeah, I still believe that it's going to end with them eventually moving on. I think Alvin just had a really rough go of it throughout his tenure with the Pelicans. I tweeted out last night, 140 starting lineups in 5 years is insane compared to any other coach in the league. I'm sure he's blowing everybody else out. Think about that, 140 different starting lineups. I mean, just so much turnover on this roster, so many injuries. I think it's just a constant thing he had to deal with. And again, it happened this year with Zion missing half the season. But I think, you know, ultimately they want to get a different kind of voice in there. I think they want to get more of a defensive-minded coach, somebody who can grow with this young roster. And I think Alvin was brought here to New Orleans to just coach a different type of team. I don't think he was brought here to coach a group full of 21, 22-year-olds. And that's just kind of, you know, where he found himself after the Anthony Davis debacle. So I think they might end up going to a coach that maybe fits what this roster needs at this point.
Do you think that – this is going to be hypothetical, so any answer, right or wrong, who knows. But do you think that if COVID-19 and the pandemic didn't happen, do you think maybe this could have turned out differently for this team?
Yeah, I still, in my mind, I think they would have made the playoff run if we were able to finish out the season and see how everything ended up. I think, you know, this has been said a million times, but they had the easiest schedule in the NBA going down the stretch, and they had so many games against the Knicks and the Hawks and the Hornets of the world, teams that were just taking away the season. And you feel like they were going to be able to bank some wins there, but when it comes down to this 8-game thing and you have all of this time off, and, you know, it's kind of a coin flip how some of these teams are going to look. And I think, you know, with Zion, it feels like so much change for him, you know, after the pandemic, and he just looks so different on the court. And I think that's a big question for the team going into the offseason as well. But I do think a lot changed because of the pandemic. But I do think ultimately, you know, kind of exposing some of these warts early on may be a good thing for this team, kind of getting it out of the way, you know, fixing some of these flaws and owning, you know, some of the downfalls that led to this will allow you to move forward quicker than you would if you had to address it next year.
Will, would it have been another hypothetical for you, going back to Alvin Gentry, would it have been better for Alvin to just, like, stay home? Would it have helped him a little bit more? I know a lot of people are judging him off of the bubble performance rather than what happened during the regular season. I think if maybe he would have been held away from the bubble, maybe his job wouldn't be on the line as much as it is now.
I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think, you know, it wouldn't have surprised me if the bubble didn't happen and they missed the playoffs, they would have moved on from Alvin regardless. I do think, like I said before, Alvin just at this point in his career isn't necessarily the perfect fit with this roster, and I think in a few different ways they would like to get a different, you know, coach with a different mindset in there. But I do think, you know, it certainly put the icing on the cake, you know, going in there and going 2-6. I think it kind of cemented what a lot of people in the front office were thinking beforehand. But I do think, you know, Alvin is a guy that's beloved in that locker room. We've heard it over and over again from the players. But ultimately, you know, the front office has to think with the future in mind. We've said this over and over again when it comes to Zion Williamson. They're looking 2-3 years down the line, and I think if they have a coach in mind, they can go grab right now that can prepare them for that. I think they're going to be proactive in doing that.
Will, who are maybe some of the candidates? I mean, I don't want to talk like we're firing Alvin Gentry, but we're talking like we're firing Alvin Gentry. Who are maybe some of the candidates out there? Do you think that the Pelicans would go with someone who would have had coaching experience, or do you think they would take a flyer on someone?
Yeah, I think the first one that comes to mind immediately, of course, is Tyronn Lue, a guy who won a championship in Cleveland with David Griffin, you know, as the GM there, and Griffin has, you know, spoken many times about how much he admires the way Ty Lue kind of took on that job and was kind of an alpha voice in that locker room next to LeBron James. And I think, you know, we've heard, you know, in the past with Jrue Holiday and Anthony Davis how this team lacked that kind of voice in the locker room. And I think we're kind of headed in that same direction with Zion and B.I. As much as we love them as talents on the floor, I don't see them as necessarily guys who are going to speak up very often in the locker room. I think they're more of a speak with their play kind of guys, especially B.I. I think getting a coach in there who's going to be that voice in the locker room, kind of be the person to push back when things are going in the wrong direction, I think that's going to be really important. So Ty Lue is a guy I think I can fit that role. And I think a really interesting name that my guy Sam Amy brought up, you know, on The Athletic a few days ago is Mike D'Antoni, a guy who's an expiring contract after this season, you know, with the Houston Rockets. They haven't really shown a lot of desire to bring him back. And obviously Mike has history with David Griffin from his Phoenix Suns days. So maybe if they want to go even more all in as an offensive squad, you go to D'Antoni or you go to Ty Lue, who's a younger guy you can see growing with this team and being, you know, that leadership role in the locker room next to B.I. and Zion.
That's Will Guillory of The Athletic. Covers the Pelicans. Follow all of his work on The Athletic. Hey, Will, appreciate the time, buddy.
Hey, I appreciate you guys.
All right. Take a break right here. When we get back, we'll spin the conversation toward LSU. We'll talk with Brody Miller, LSU beat writer for The Athletic. Here on the Sports Hangover, Larry Holder filling in for the Goose, ESPN New Orleans.
Today, pros have to do.
Great. You're going to be a wonderful mom. And I can't wait to be a grandpa. Not too long ago, moments like this with my daughter would have been a challenge. It was a long road for me to find myself again after Vietnam. I struggled to connect with almost everyone and preferred being alone. It was my neighbor Jim, another Vietnam veteran, who finally convinced me that I could still connect with my family and find that fulfilling life I'd lost. In fact, I called Jim first with the news about my granddaughter, Lizzie. Hey, Jim, I'm going to be a grandfather.
Congratulations, Dave.
Hey, let's get together and celebrate.
As long as you're not grilling.
My pride was my armor, but I didn't know it then. I couldn't put it into words. I was sad, was scared, I felt alone. I didn't know how to reach out, so I hid behind anger and silence. But then I decided to listen to Jim, and I went for help down at the VA. If I can take that first step after almost 50 years, I know other veterans can too. Visit maketheconnection.net to find out more.
In the Army National Guard, family means everything.
Our parents, they were really supportive that all five of us would join. I got my education because of the Guard. I got to travel a little bit and experience a whole different culture. It helped me get my job, helped me pay for my house.
Serving part-time in the Army National Guard instills pride that you and your family will share. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Louisiana Army National Guard. Aired by the Louisiana Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hi, I'm Casey Gisclair.
And I'm Stan Gravois.
Join us every Saturday right here for the Sports Corner.
High school, college, and national sports.
Coaches and call-ins and your take on our opinions in the world of sports.
So join us every Saturday from 10 to noon.
right here on the Sports Corner, presented by TGMC Community Sports Institute,
10 to noon
on ESPN 100.3.
Welcome back, Sports Hangover. Larry Holder filling in for the Goose. Don't forget, hour number one brought to you by the King Firm. Don't play the game of claim with the insurance companies. If you have been injured in an accident, ring the King at 909-KING. Switching topics here, we'll jump back into Pelicans chatter later on in hour two and plenty in hour three when Andrew Lopez of ESPN jumps in the chair and fills in for me, filling in for Goose. But head up to Baton Rouge, talk to our good friend Brody Miller, LSU beat writer for The Athletic. And LSU still, as of now, playing football in the fall. Brody, I'm sure your head has spun just like ours, and I thought it was even interesting. Our colleague Stuart Mandel, he puts out his top 25 this morning, and it's a bunch of schools you wouldn't anticipate being in the top 25 because of the way the college football landscape has happened.
Well, I'm honestly just offended you don't want to talk Pelicans with me, but I guess I'll have to move on and accept we'll talk some LSU. But
we
yes,
could talk Pelicans all. We could talk Pelicans all day. I'm sure today, when people are like,
"Let's do it." Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, yeah, my head has absolutely been spinning. I mean, as of Sunday night, I think and most of the college football world really thought the college football season was going to be over by the end of the week, and then by Tuesday, it seems like LSU and the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC are just rolling on, and obviously the American with Tulane, it seems like it's going that way too. Yeah, I mean, it's been a bizarre week. It's been a week of making plans for what I'm going to do if football's canceled. So, I'm hanging in there, though.
Brody, as far as LSU, look, they've been pretty staunch. You know, Ed Orgeron's going on anywhere he can be to say he wants to play, and that approach has been pretty staunch, to say the least. And as far as what they're actually doing, I guess they're going on as close to business as usual as far as practicing and they're, you know, just kind of trucking on. Is that what they're doing?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, fall camp got pushed back about a week or so just for obvious reasons because the season's now pushed back about 3 weeks. But, yeah, I mean, they're still doing workouts. They're still doing the football school, which is basically just, no football, but no pads and all of that, but just kind of going over the X's and O's parts of stuff a little bit more. And then I think camp starts next week, so I mean it's all kind of happening. It's bizarre as it seems. I mean, LSU had their photo shoots the other day, or like a week ago, and I mean they're rolling out interviews. It's just like they're just operating like you said, like business as usual. And Miles Brennan, obviously the new quarterback, posted Instagram with the caption on lines of like, hey, like, if you're asking if there's going to be a season, and it's him pointing forward, you know? So, yeah, I think they're the SEC, more than even anyone, is really just operating like football's going to happen, and you're going to have to make them stop.
Brody Miller, LSU beat writer for The Athletic, joining us right here on Sports Hangover. Larry Holder, also of The Athletic, filling in for the Goose. He'll be back on Monday or Tuesday or whenever he gets back in here. But the popular topic when all of these conferences, particularly the Power Five conferences, once they ditched fall football, transfers. How viable is that, and how viable would that be for LSU?
So it's a great question. It's something that, I mean, I know LSU's at least monitoring, let's put it that way. You know, the idea that, let's think of Ohio State off the top of our head. Say Ohio State, for example, those players are allowed to transfer because, they're not playing football this year. I mean, and at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to happen. And I think, if I'm speculating, I think part of why the Big Ten and some of these conferences are pushing so far to at least try to do spring is that they're at least saying, like, because if they at least are trying to do spring, then they don't have the players don't have the arguments that their football season got canceled. You know what I mean? And then they can't, leave immediately without any issue. And I think that's going to be kind of the semantics, I bet, about whether or not they can do that. I do think it's possible. I mean, we've seen it before with, you just use the example of like a USC or an Ole Miss having all these sanctions come down. Players have been able to transfer without issues. So you know, it's definitely something to keep an eye on, and I think LSU is keeping an eye on. They got one scholarship spot open for the 2020 class still that they very intentionally were patient with and just kind of waiting it out, waiting to see if some perfect scenario rises instead of settling on some, you know, nobody that they're as excited about. And, you know, worst-case scenario, they just carry that scholarship over to the 2021 class. But my overall answer to your question is I think LSU's monitoring it. I don't think it's out of the question that the free scholarship, free transfers could happen, but my gut feeling is it's just not going to happen because of semantics of you know, they're going to keep trying to play spring, and also just the fact of, like, are you really going to allow this huge of a shift of power in college football for a one-year thing? You know what I mean? Because if that happens, I mean, college sports are going to change because all of a sudden all of the talent from the Big Ten, the Pac-12, all these places are suddenly going to be playing in the SEC and the ACC. That's just a huge decision.
So I should not personalize a jersey with Fields 1 on the back. I should not do that. Justin Fields shouldn't do it.
You know, I think it'd be fun to do just for the, you know, the memory of it, kind of like how I have like the Edward Encarnacion red jersey that has no use.
It's like a Dez Bryant jersey, but he practiced for 2 days with the Saints, and then he was gone forever. Brody Miller of The Athletic joining us right here on the Sports Hangover. Larry Holder filling in for the Goose. On the field, we know Miles Brennan. Let's just leave that alone. We know that's a huge question mark going into the season. But what are some of the other question marks that you're really looking at? I know for me, offensive line, and I know you've written about that. How solidified are they along that offensive line going into fall right now?
Yeah, you know, it's one of my favorite topics to discuss because it really just does depend on how you look at it. And by that I mean, you know, it's so much unknown because you only have one true starter back. So in that sense, yeah, it's not good. An offensive line, more than any other position in football, you need continuity. You need them to just, like, know how to play next to each other. It's as simple silly as that sounds. But then you also look at it and it's like, here's what I'll say. You were there as much as I. 2018, that offensive line was a disaster, right?
Yes.
Well, the difference between this offensive line and that is that in 2018, it was probably like 6, maybe 7 bodies they trusted. You know, and then you add in the injuries and all the youth, and it was like, yeah, they liked those 5 or 6, but that was all they had. And then so it was just a tough situation. What I will say this year is they are at least like 9 to 10 deep of guys, in my opinion, they really like. You know, like, you know, for example, I don't think Anthony Bradford or Cardell Thomas are going to start this year, but I think those are guys they're really high on as redshirt freshmen that totally be a swingman guard in the situation if you need them to. Or you know, I don't know. You know, you go to somebody like, you know, some of the incoming freshmen like Xavier Hill. You know, they like him a lot. So all of that is to say, I think Liam Shanahan stepping in, coming in, I think they got him, if we're being honest, was probably more of just a depth move. They were like, all right, we need at least another veteran body. Him coming in and immediately switching to a new position at center and being kind of the grown up in the room, right, and being a veteran presence who can learn that position, who can lead everybody. You know, he's got the Harvard education, actually really earned that center spot. That freed everything up because now you can move Chasen Hines back to his natural position at guard. Now I guess is he's going to be the starting right guard. And suddenly you just feel better about this whole thing. And then you mix with the aforementioned depth that they actually do have this year. And I'm not saying it's going to be a good offensive line because you do have so many question marks. But I'm not as, you know, I don't think it's a panic position like I might have 3 months ago.
Brody Miller of The Athletic right here on the Sports Hangover. Brody, is there a position where we're not super panicked about and yet there might be some questions there?
Yeah, there is. And again, when I say this, I want to say, like, there's a chance this position's great. It's just it's the least talked about question mark, and it's defensive end. Because defensive line, it gets this weird thing. We talk about the defensive line, about how good it's going to be, because they have, like, 5 starters back practically, you know, with Shelvin and Ika and Glenn Logan, and then, well, Neil Farrell sitting out, but he was in that group. And, you know, they seem loaded. But here's the thing. Those are all going to play defensive tackle on a 4-3 team. Now you have a defensive end. You got a lot of high upside guys, but you don't have anybody they know for sure they can trust. You know, you have, you know, for example, T.K. McClendon's one of the guys they really like, but he's a converted tight end who's only been playing that position for a year, and he's never really played in a game. And then Justin Thomas is a guy who I feel pretty confident is going to be a starting end, and they really like him. He was one of their top pass rushers last year before his suspension, but he's a guy with suspension issues, and he's a guy who just never really see play extended time. So then you got, they love some of these freshmen. They love B.J. Ojulari. They think he's going to be All-American. But at the same time, you know, it's a true freshman. You're never going to expect a true freshman defensive end, right? And then, you know, you got guys like that. Or Andre Anthony. Who knows what he's going to be? He's been there 5 years. You know, it's a group where, like, could totally see a scenario where two of those guys actually really step up and have great seasons. But at the same time, there is just zero certainty among all any of those. So that's actually, I think, the least talked about question.
Brody, as far as tailback, I'm curious to see how that rotation goes. How do you think they stack up right now?
You know, it's one of the weirder position groups to talk about just because it's, you know, for example, I did my position rankings a month ago, and the way we like to do them is, like, it's not a ranking of how good they are. It's the stability, the insecurity ranking, you know. And I have running back second on the offense because it's stable, because, you know, you have 3 to 4 guys, you know what you're getting, right? You know Chris Curry is a solid, reliable back, played really well in the Peach Bowl. You know John Emery is a really talented 5-star, can make some big plays. Tyrion Davis was most productive of all of them, you know. So, and they like Trey Bradford, the freshman. You have bodies you know you can at least, like, trust. But you also have no idea what the upside is of any of them because none of them have really been given a major shot. You don't know who's going to really stand out. Or, like, I think that's kind of the big thing to follow. But what I will say is I do think Chris Curry is at least in the driver's seat. I think he's the person who's earned the most trust. Like, he knows what he's doing the most. And I think he really won a lot of people over, which is kind of how he went from the bottom of the depth chart to the start in the Peach Bowl this last year. And Coach O even threw his name out as a possible number 18 candidate. So I think Chris Curry is at least in the driver's seat, but you know as well as I, John Emery or Davis Price, those are guys who have a lot more upside if they get it all together.
It is funny how we're always talking about John Emery and Ty Davis Price, and last year Clyde Edwards-Helaire takes the show, and then it's funny how Curry could be that top back. So really interesting battle to watch. Brody Miller of The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at Brody A. Miller. And hopefully we are going to be talking about LSU football after this week and the next week and the next week. So, Brody, stay on top of it, my friend.
Thanks so much, Larry. Have a good one.
All right, Brody. All right, that's going to wrap up that segment here on the Sports Hangover. We're going to jump and talk NFL for the next good hour plus here on the show. We're going to go talk with our national NFL writer for The Athletic, Lindsey Jones. We'll kind of get a good league scope of how the league has handled the pandemic and how, going forward, what are some of the issues that could be laying out there. Hour number two, we're going to be talking plenty of Saints talk. We'll talk with Catherine Terrell at 1:30, Jeff Duncan at 1:45, and those first two segments, I'll go through each position group, what I'm looking at in camp, because, look, they're going to be talking and hitting come Monday. Padded practices are going to open up, so real training camp is certainly going to get moving here as we progress. Going through OTA sessions basically right now, and then you'll start with some padded practices. So, but, yeah, look. As far as at LSU, I know they've been going kind of full speed ahead with their practices, and Coach O is wanting to play football. LSU might be the only team left in the country that's going to be playing if things change. But look, it's actually looking on a positive note for the SEC, Big 12, and of course the ACC. So Lindsey Jones, national NFL writer, when we come back here. Larry Holder filling in for the Goose here on the Sports Hangover, ESPN New Orleans.
El Paso Mexican Grill would like to say thank you to all of their customers. They are now open for dine-in and fantastic authentic Mexican food. Stop by and enjoy their daily lunch specials or dine in for dinner as well. El Paso Mexican Food in Raceland on Highway 1 has the best food on the bayou. Great Mexican food from their family to yours. So don't cook tonight or settle for fast food. Give El Paso Mexican Grill and Cantina a call today. 985-664-1411.
Offshore workers are among the most important members of the Gulf Coast workforce. When a person working offshore or on a vessel is injured, the effects on their family can be devastating. At the King Firm, we are proud to have experience with these types of cases and make it a priority to see that our clients receive just compensation and are treated fairly. If you've been injured, don't play the game of claims with the insurance companies. Ring the King at 504-909-KING or 888-241-8766.
As a leader in the oil and gas industry, Joe Septic Contractors caters to oil field clients, offering vacuum truck service for offshore tanks, vessels, or treatment plants containing sewage or gray water. Their rental department offers state-of-the-art offshore portable toilets with cages and certified safety slings for easy maneuvering, also holding tank rentals and portable hand-washing stations. So call Joe Septic Contractors 24-7 at 985-632-5592 in Cutoff, Thibodeau, Fouchon, and Abbeville, or visit their website at joeseptic@viscom.net.
Hello, this is State Senator Gary Smith from District 19. I want to let you know that I am very concerned about the impact COVID-19 is having on each and every one of us. To stay cautious and practice social distancing, wash hands often, remember to not touch your face, and watch out for your older family members and neighbors. I have been working very hard along with our other elected officials and the governor, and we are taking this very seriously. Please listen for daily news. As everyone does their part, we will prevail. Thank you.
Follow us on Twitter, PN Radio NOLA.
Welcome back, Sports Hangover. Larry Holder filling in for the Goose. We'll switch over to the NFL. My colleague, national NFL writer Lindsey Jones, joining us on the show. And look, we had to really make a concerted effort to talk about the NFL in these few minutes I've got Lindsey, just because I know she quickly wants to switch the conversation to 90210. As many people on Twitter, if you follow both of us, we're both 90210 dorks, like the hugest dorks.
Yeah. If they could only see our Slack channel.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Yeah, I think we can talk about football and COVID and all of that stuff. I think we can manage.
I think we can, too, maybe. But, not, you know, Valerie Malone, who can't stop talking about her, but We'll try to talk some NFL here. Look, you've been really covering the COVID-19 issue for us at The Athletic. As far as your perspective on how the league has handled this overall, it seems on my end, Saints-wise, it seems like they've taken the precautions and have really done a pretty good job considering the variables. As a league, how do you think we're heading into kind of the meat of training camp now with padded practices really starting league-wide on Monday? How do you think teams in the league have kind of handled this so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're about 2.5 weeks or so into this process. And, you know, I guess up to this point, it's gone as well as could be expected. The number of positive tests is significantly lower than, even than what people at the league office and with all the clubs were expecting. You know, I think they were kind of bracing for a number of positive cases that were a little bit closer to what we were seeing nationally. And, you know, what we saw is it was significantly lower. So that's a credit to players and coaches and employees and everything who, probably did a pretty good job of being responsible before they reported training camp a couple weeks ago. And then, you know, I think there haven't been any outbreaks yet. We haven't seen, players or employees. I think we have to be clear that it's not just players in this case, but anybody that's entering kind of each team's, keep calling it a virtual bubble, which it's not really a bubble. I don't know if you can call it a virtual bubble, but that's coming into like the team facilities and bringing anything in yet. You know, we're seeing very few numbers of guys who are getting newly placed on that reserve COVID list. The big question is look, this isn't like a 2 to 3 week or even a 2 month thing that the NFL is trying to prepare here for. I mean, this is 5 to 6 months of these sorts of protocols. You know, maybe the country will be in a different place in October than we are right now, and some of the protocols will change, and, you know, the guys won't have to be on quite as strict, strict of behavior. But, you know, look, we're 2 weeks in, it's gone well so far, but we're really moving into the meat of training camp right now, where, you know, all the teams are practicing in some manner right now. On Monday, everybody will be in pads for the first time. So we're going to be seeing that really close on-field contact. So the big question is, how long can they keep this up and keep the good behavior, the responsible behavior away from the facilities and keep this disease out and keep it from affecting a football season like we've seen it happening in Major League Baseball.
Lindsey Jones, national NFL writer at The Athletic, joining us right here on the Sports Hangover. Larry Holder filling in for the Goose. Lindsey, as far as we're moving forward, like you said, and bubbling as much as you can, but Sean Payton maybe I'm trying to remember my weeks, maybe a week or two ago, was pretty frank in saying that he's basically going under the assumption that a disruption of play will happen. As far as that happen, I mean, are you assuming that? I've kind of always assumed that that would happen just because we've seen it in baseball a lot. I know they're on the road a lot more than NFL teams, but I'm under the assumption that we're going to see a disruption of play. And do you, if that's the case, how much of a game plan do you think the NFL has for that scenario?
Yeah, I think it would be naive to think that it's not going to happen. I mean, that's just not probably in line with the reality of what's going on around the country and what's happened in other professional sports that don't have the NBA-style strict bubble. You know, I think the NFL, what would happen in baseball first with the Marlins and then really this long ongoing process that's going on with the St. Louis Cardinals right now, you know, that was a huge wake-up call to the NFL. And if you watched Hard Knocks this week, you saw the coaches in Hard Knocks with the Rams and the Chargers both mentioning baseball specifically, let's not be the Marlins, let's not be the Cardinals. We're going to keep hearing more of that. But I think we should assume that there will be some sort of it has to happen at some point, right? I mean, the assumption that 2,000 NFL players and hundreds of more team employees will not bring a new infection into one of these facilities over the next 5 months, I just don't think that's something that we can assume is going to happen. The NFL did not build in a lot of contingency plans into the schedule. I mean, the main one is that they have flexibility to push the postseason back, that they could build in extra weeks if games that were scheduled in September or October, let's say, can't happen because one team has lost, you know, it's an entire offensive line or something like this. You could, you know, you could play some of those games or those weeks. You could move an entire week potentially into January. You could, you know, more of a worst case scenarios if something drastically changes over the next couple of weeks. You know, if you delay the start of the season, you push it back to starting, you know, the first week of October, and then everything from there gets pushed back. But it wasn't this like collapsible schedule where you could just pull out entire weeks and move things around. You know, it's not going to be that simple. And then the NFL doesn't have the benefit that baseball does where, you know, baseball can play doubleheaders. And the Cardinals are going to be playing a ton of doubleheaders, but that is not something that's available, obviously, to the NFL. So, you know, if they have a team that can't play for whatever reason, it's going to require a lot more, just a lot more things that they're going to have to work through in terms of moving games and pushing back weeks. So, you know, I think, you know, back when they released the schedule back in April, I think there were a lot of us that thought maybe they should be building in some more contingency plans there. And very much in April, the league was still in this, like, we're pushing forward, we're going to play, we're going to play our full schedule, and it'll be fine. And here we are now, you know, we're a month away, less than a month away from this will be opening weekend, right? September 14th for most of these, 14th, 15th, that weekend. And we're all just kind of wishing and hoping, and that's maybe not the best plan.
Lindsey Jones, national NFL writer here on the Sports Hangover with Larry Holder, filling in for Gus Kattengill. One more question we'll let you run. Speaking of pushing things back, you obviously know college football is trying to push things back in some conferences. And how does that affect scouting? How does that affect the draft? I know you and Dan Kaplan, our colleague at The Athletic, wrote a story about that. Where is teams' heads there, the NFL's heads with that obviously monkey wrench kind of in the mix now?
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna have a lot of ripple effect here. And, you know, I think the first thing that we're kind of waiting on is our college football colleagues at The Athletic have been doing a really good job at tracking which players are opting out and how many of these draft-eligible players. You know, and it might be a lot of these guys who just a couple days ago were tweeting hashtag we want to play. Well, do you want to play in the spring? If you're in the Big Ten or the Pac-12, you know that you're not playing in the fall. And who's going to come out? What is that draft pool going to look like? And then how do these guys get evaluated? And it's going to be really, really hard. And we're going to learn a lot about who in the NFL has really connected scouts, you know, where they're able to get their information, how good they are projecting off of film, you know. Scouting departments, personnel departments, they moved a lot of stuff virtually last spring. But by the time they did that, they had already done all the scouts work, you know, the road scouts. They had their full reports and grades from everything that they gleaned in the fall all the way through the combine. Now for the 2021 aspects, basically starting all of this completely virtually. They're not going to have any of those in-person meetings with trainers and academic liaisons and secretaries and all this stuff that they do for getting background information. And the film on a lot of these guys is going to be, you know, a year and a half old. And, you know, how many guys are changing as prospects between, you know, their sophomore year and what would have been their junior, the end of their junior year? I mean, Joe Burrow is by far the most dramatic example. I mean, it's so rare to see a guy go from, I mean, he wasn't a top 100 prospect.
Absolutely.
August 13th, 2019.
We know full well. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, yeah,
about
I don't have to tell you guys sure. in Louisiana. But,
absolutely.
But I mean, he's the most extreme example. But there's a lot of guys, you know, especially guys who play, you know, on, you know, offensive defensive lines where their bodies are going to change a lot just in terms of, like, their sheer stature
right.
as they're growing from 19 to 21 years old. You know, a lot of position changes that might go on over the course of your college career. So it's going to be really, really difficult, I think. And, you know, we had a scout tell us earlier this week that they expect this to be the lowest hit rate of any draft.
Yeah.
Just because of the uncertainty in the scouting process.
Absolutely.
So,
Lindsay, yeah, we got to let you run here. Sorry about that. We're at the top
no,
of the hour.
Good. Yeah,
all right. That's Lindsay Jones, a national NFL writer at The Athletic. Hour number one is up. Hour number two of the Sports Hangover is on the way. Larry Holder filling in for Gus Kattengill here on the Sports Hangover, ESPN New Orleans.
It took us